Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
That you are, ladies and gentlemen, but Paul Strohle is winging his way from Chicago back to Los Angeles today, so he is up in the air, and in his place, in the hot seat, is my co-host, Andrew David James.
You may call me Stunt Strohle. I fill in whenever he's got dangerous jobs other places.
I know, right? And you do such a great job. We're so happy to have you here, buddy.
Thank you, man. Glad to be back.
Absolutely. So, what about this weather today? It's kind of weird, right?
It is. Did you hear about the blackout in Sherman Oaks?
Yes. No.
As we overlook the beautiful Sherman Oaks vista that we have here at the LA Talk Radio Live set here, we know that half of Sherman Oaks has no power. They were out. They had a blackout halfway through the night, and they were without power all morning. I was wondering if we were going to go on today.
Well, you know, I live in Sherman Oaks.
Right.
Yeah.
And obviously are completely unaware of anything going on.
No.
Do you live in the dark now and you didn't notice when
I did not. But you know something weird? This is weird because it came over my email, a news alert from a string of papers that AOL owns online called Patch Newspapers. Mm-hmm. And so every city pretty much has
We have
one.
Them in Malibu, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
They reported that because of the gas company, there will be DWP outages that are planned outages throughout the next several months as we get into the summer.
Wow.
For some unknown amount of time.
Wow.
That we're all going to be subject to.
They're all through LA? All through Los Angeles?
I believe so.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Well, now, rough day here, so.
But what does that have to do with anything? What does the DWP have to get
into? It's very true.
Like, they are so. I want to. These people.
They had the time. They want to go out and do some work.
They are morons, these people. All right. Maybe we won't go there.
Michael Rant. Yes. Well, I need a special sound effect for the Michael Rant. Do we have anything? How about a little something?
Well, who
like
likes
this?
The DWP? Nobody does, right?
I'm going to give you this every time you go on a rant.
Oh, man.
We'll have a Michael Rant sound effect.
I love it,
Michael.
I think that's my cue to thank our sponsors. Our
we
lovely
have some good sponsors.
Sponsors,
indeed.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
We are indeed. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen? Will Shakespeare and the Beatles are in the air. You can just smell it. You can breathe it. It's happening. And everyone in this studio today, with the exception of myself for some very strange reason, we're going to get into that, will be on stage at the Hillcrest Center for the Arts beginning tomorrow night, April 8th, and continuing through April 24th. And I think this is beyond cool. You know, I have a history with those four ragamuffins. Do you know that?
And what I ask, what well, would that
we'll,
be, Michael?
We'll get into that a little later.
Wow.
But first, before we speak with our guests, I want to just ask you, how was your week?
A very good question. I am prepared to answer that question. Now, last week we lied to our audience. We said that I would not be here and the great Paul Strohle would be back. But I locked him up in my closet so I get one more show.
As he was supposed to schedule to be back.
Right, but I didn't want him coming back.
Oh,
he's
you locked
too
him
good,
up.
So
oh, that's
why. I figure I get a little more work that way, you see.
Right.
No, I got the call that Paul wasn't going to be here, and I knew you were going to ask me about my week. And so I went out and did very, very interesting things. First things first, I went to go see a show with you.
Yes,
we had
you did.
A very good time at the Falcon Theater.
Gary Marshall's place.
Gary does the most amazingly consistent, high-caliber work. He really does a fantastic job with that space. Two friends of the show in the performance, of course, and they were great. Mark was unbelievable. But also, I had occasion to take my young ones on a hike.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes, we went up to the Escondido Falls, and I had a little Katie and little Cobb running all the way up there to see these great waterfalls where there was no water whatsoever. They didn't understand the drought was going to take away the waterfalls, and I just said, well, we'll go up to Escondido Falls. And they were very excited, but they got up there and were very disappointed. I realized I'd never explained, well, it's still called Escondido Falls, even though there's no falls. So we had a good chance to talk about the environment and some of the lessons learned there. So
your kids get a one. You're very sensitive for being such a great dad. and concerned about your children's best welfare and doing things like that. You expose them to a lot of neat things.
It's nice of you to say. I tell you, anytime you have children, it changes your perspective so much.
Sure.
And one thing you realize is that you can never do it right. You just keep trying every day to do it a little bit better the next time. So hopefully we're all
doing
that.
Have our guests met your children yet?
They have. In fact, Kelly and Caleb, my little boy, came in and saw Kelly and immediately was drawn to her. And Alan, of course, has seen Katie and Cobb a number of times when they've come to see him in Christmas Carol. In fact, I should note, I was fortunate enough to play Bob Cratchit, which Alan played for nearly 20 years before me.
Yes.
And my little boy says, I miss the old Bob Cratchit. So he's a big fan of Alan's. I'm not sure he likes Daddy too much. So
that is sweet. And he's smart.
Yep. He understands good performances when he sees them.
Absolutely.
How about you? How was your week?
You know what? Very good. Thank you. Yes, we did see a wonderful show, which we're going to talk about in the Live Arts calendar today, at Gary Marshall's Falcon Theater, The Real Wives of Toluca Lake, The Real Housewives of Toluca Lake, mm-hmm. I should say, which is a great send-up of that whole kind of reality show thing that they do on TV these days. But other than that, getting ready to open the full Monty for 3D theatricals down at Redondo Beach. We open on the 16th. Our press opening is on the 16th. And are you familiar with 3D theatricals at all? No?
Neither of our guests are. That's right.
It's one of the best regional theaters in Orange County, and they have rescued the Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center. Its previous occupants went out of business, unfortunately, and they also rescued a theater in Fullerton called the Plummer Auditorium, which is a very historic landmark there. So they bicycle their big, beautiful, very beautifully mounted shows between these two theaters. And
so it's been still alive.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. I'm 2 years with them, representing them for publicity and public relations and having a ball because they're amazing. And the 3Ds are actually three siblings whose parents had the means and wherewithal to say, what do you want to do with the rest of your life? And they said, we want to produce theater. We're all performers, and we want to do it the right way.
They have such a great mix of their season. They do shows that I can take my kids to, and they can do shows that are a good date night or whatever like that. So it's nice to see them kind of stretching out and inviting a lot of people in to see theater.
Yeah,
it's a great
thing. And they're lovely people to work with, so I'm happy about that. But I think we need to get into the business of who's on this show.
These two amazingly talented people sitting next to us.
And I must say, before we get into the first interview, that how people call on the radio show, and sometimes they're not always we don't usually answer the phone because there's no buffer, there's no screening process here. But hopefully today we have possibly a surprise guest who I think has some meaning to one of our guests.
It's my mom, isn't it?
It's not
my
your
mom's calling in.
Not you.
No.
Not
okay.
Today. She might call in on another day.
I'll just call her then. She keeps hanging up on me. It's getting a little weird.
He would be something who has a gentleman who I have known for many years who has something in common with one of our guests.
I like to hear that.
Yes?
Very exciting.
So hopefully if you see that number pop up on your screen, Andrew, you'll answer that phone.
That's right. I'll be our screener today, so we could be in big trouble.
Okay, so that may be coming through any minute.
Sounds great. A little bit of a tease here on State of the Arts.
Absolutely.
Shall we introduce these amazing people?
I think we should. Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, is the artistic director of the Thousand Oaks Repertory Company, which annually performs at the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza, along with producer Terry Fishman, who I happened to meet today on the telephone. What a lovely lovely person that
indeed
was. He conceived and collaborated on the concept of Shakespeare and the Beatles, a surprise concert. He has also been an award-winning director with the Kingsman Shakespeare Festival on the CLU campus in Thousand Oaks, as well as director with two Ojai summer productions of Shakespeare at the Ojai Libby Bowl. He also heads a theater performing arts program at Oak Park High School, which, by the way, was recently named by Newsweek magazine as one of the top 100 schools in America.
Mm-hmm.
True, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As an actor, he may be familiar to TV audiences as Stu Riley on ABC's Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea and attorney Richard Clayton on ABC's General Hospital. Give it up for Alan Hunt.
There you go.
Those are all his students he brought with him. 150 students standing right at that window.
He is no fool.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Sir. And thank you, Michael.
Oh, you are so welcome.
I have a lot to answer for, don't I? When I really think about it.
Pleasure to have you here. I think this is a wonderful concept, this show.
Thanks. We kind of stumbled upon it, really, because the idea in the beginning was to try to blend Shakespeare pieces with just famous songs, mm-hmm. famous ballads, famous. And the more that was thought about, we just, for some reason, kept steering back towards the Beatles.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Andrew?
Oh, we have a surprise call. Hello, hello. Who is this?
This is Derek Lewis calling in for Michael's guest, Alan Hunt.
Derek Lewis, you're on the air, sir. How are you? May I say hello to you now?
I'm say hello.
I'm glad to have you on.
I don't get as many hellos as I'd like, so there you go.
Michael told us that you would be calling. I had no idea that it would be you, sir. How are you?
I am here. I'm fine. Well, Michael surprised me.
Now, can you do me a favor? Michael, could you introduce who he is
to
our guest?
This gentleman is such a classy man to begin with in his real life, and I am so happy to have known him for so many years, Derek Lewis, who happened to be on the first season of Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, and you came on, sir, in the second season.
That's
is that
true.
Correct?
Yes.
So I think you met recently at a convention. That was the first time that you met Derek. So say
yes.
Hello, Alan.
Oh, how
exactly.
funny.
Hello, Derek. Good
hey,
to talk
Alan.
To you, man.
Derek, I got to tell you, what a pleasure. I've watched you many, many times. What a nice surprise. Thank you for calling in today.
That's very sweet. Well, I wanted to say hello to Alan again. It's been a while. The convention was a year and a half ago or more.
That's
and
right.
It was the 50th anniversary
God
of the
us.
Debut of Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
It's true.
On TV. It's My, true. How time flies.
Well, you're both still good-looking guys, that I can assure you. So. It's nice to have you. And Derek resides up in the desert,
yep.
north of Los Angeles.
I remember he said that.
In the beautiful Palm Springs area, and is a very musical man.
This
you
is
know,
true.
And one of the great producers of music out there in the desert. It has been for years. So we miss
it's
him.
It's interesting that both Al and I went into producing or directing or what, you know, from our work in Hollywood in those days. Alan is very accomplished and. And we have mutual friends like Pat Culliton, who was on the show also.
Yes. Of course.
And so I admire a lot of what Alan's been doing out there. I'm just amazed that we're still doing it. <you know? laughs>
Well, you certainly will be for many years to come. You know why? Because it's your passion, and that's what keeps you going, I think.
Exactly.
I certainly feel that way about
exactly.
what I do.
Yeah.
And I can't think of anybody better that I know other than you, Derek, that does what you do so well out there in the beautiful Palm Springs and Palm Desert area.
I appreciate that. It is a beautiful place to live at this point in my life, I miss L.A. sometimes, not all a lot.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Those of us
I don't miss the traffic and the other stuff, but those Hollywood years were amazing, and I think Al and I both were lucky to have lived and worked in the 60s and the 70s, which were the golden days of television.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were.
And so we have nice memories, I'm sure. Well, plus, we're both theater people.
There you
right.
go.
Very much so.
You know?
Derek, we have to get into the rest of the program now, but thank you so, so much for taking the time to call in and say hello to Alan and to us. And we're just going to have you on the show as a guest in studio the next time you're in Los Angeles. With
anytime,
promote,
Michael.
Right?
Thank you very much. And best wishes, Alan.
Thank you, Derek. That's so good to hear your voice, man. Thanks for calling in.
Great to
My
meet
pleasure.
You over the phone, Derek. Thanks so much for calling in.
All right.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What a nice surprise, Alan. You have a long history of people you've worked with in this industry, don't you, man?
Well, you know, show business is very cloistered. We always seem to bump into the same people, and that's a good thing. Even if you're in New York or L.A., sometimes even in London, where you think you won't know anybody there,
right.
It's a very small world. And I think those of us who have the bug, once we get it, we're in for life, man. Good fortune, bad fortune, it's our chosen life, our chosen field. And that is one of the happy circumstances with that. We have friends that we know for great long periods of time.
Well, and as an actor, I've benefited from that because you will frequently, when we need to fill a part for Christmas Carol, you will call in someone who you haven't worked with for a few years, but someone who has notable TV credits, a great professional, comes in and kind of bolsters the cast a little bit. It goes to show that relationships in this industry are long relationships. Keep them strong and keep them positive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was an old joke about the meetings between producers. Where are the best deals made? And they said, at the AA meetings. and I'm not kidding, but that's... They were all together. It was a brotherhood thing, you know. But, yeah, it's a small world in that regard.
That's well, right.
You know, and even what you were doing on television during those days, Derek said to me earlier this morning that he keeps, a lot of the fans keep in touch through now the means of Facebook and all of these other web outlets, and I guess these conventions are all over the world because this series continues to be shown, all over the world.
Irwin Allen, who produced it, he's something of a legend now because he did a couple of them, Lost in Space and other shows at that time, and kind of owned the airwaves. We always thought of us as being Lost in Space or rather Star Trek underwater. That's what we thought our show was, because it was all about the future and science fiction and everything.
I tried Star Trek naked. It didn't work as well.
Oh,
didn't
really?
Work by a pilot. Yeah, it was kind of strange.
That was a little too much information.
Do what I can.
Let's get back to what we're really here to talk about. And we were talking about, of course, Shakespeare and the Beatles. And you were saying that the original idea was Shakespeare and popular music, and then you kept going back to the Beatles.
Well, we kept, a couple of years ago, I had done a production of The Merry Wives of Windsor, and we set it in a different time frame. We set it in the swinging 60s.
Mm-hmm.
London with pop art and miniskirts and...
Which makes sense.
It was really a lot of fun. And we had 100% Beatle music accompanying the show. And that was in the back of my mind, I guess, because when we started to do this idea, it's really a music review. And it begins with an individual speech or scene from a Shakespeare piece, some funny, some sad, etc. And it's followed immediately... The same actors and actresses follow immediately with a Beatles song that basically says the same emotions or feelings that the Shakespeare piece did. And the timelessness of both is what we hope to demonstrate, and we hope the audience will agree with us. It's a fun comparison, and it shows how 400 years later we still have the same emotions, same feelings, jealousy, hatred, love,
go
passion.
Figure.
And the Beatles... Their catalog is remarkably varied. You always think of I Want to Hold Your Hand, She Loves You, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah. But, man, their other stuff, there's a piece that Andrew does from Hamlet.
And speaking of Andrew, how is this guy to direct on the
easy.
Stage?
Easy.
Is he?
Because he's also a director himself. No, Andrew is a very theatrically oriented person. You can tell right away you have a wavelength.
Yeah.
And some actors going, say what? You want me to do what? And is right with you. In fact, he comes up with some pretty good ideas himself.
I bet.
But I would say Andrew is an actor's actor. He comes from that kind of
Well, that's about the
viewpoint.
Highest compliment you can give an actor.
I don't have
any
20s available. Is it okay if I give you 4 5s today? Thank you.
By the way, can I say right now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm a Sherman Oaks resident. And my power did not go out.
Good. There you go.
I just want that known.
In the positive group today, that's right.
I showered this morning in full light, and it was wonderful. And so
we don't know, though, when we get home what's happening.
No, that's true. And I didn't know about this blackout until I heard just now what you guys were saying.
Yeah. I read about it on the way in on the news, and they said it affected about half of Sherman Oaks. So maybe they've gotten it fixed by now, but it's a strange thing to have half of a city dark and to come into work and not know if the lights are going to be on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this strange, building obviously must have a generator
anyway.
I think
that's probably true.
Yeah.
Now, Alan, you were talking a little bit about some of the songs that you chose to put in. And, of course, some of the ones that we do are very dark pieces from some of Shakespeare's harder shows and more challenging emotional shows. Pairing those with some Beatles music seemed like a very difficult thing to do. Turned out to be remarkably easy to find the right piece. It was almost as if they were written for the Shakespeare show.
And really may I add to that question before he answers, is it all well-known Beatles music, or are there obscure pieces?
As a matter of fact, the more we delved into this, the more we veered towards this idea, Michael, that the Shakespeare is probably the most famous, the most well-known pieces, To Be or Not to Be, Is this a dagger I see before me? If music be the food of love, play on. Things that are kind of in our general knowledge today. The most famous Shakespeare and some of the more obscure Beatles songs. Many times in our performances, the audiences, we hear them go, oh, like, oh, I remember that song. So and some are really famous Beatles songs, but others are the lesser known, but had a particular slant on it that John Lennon felt very passionately about, or Paul did. And in fact, Andrew David, in one of his pieces, can we reveal it?
Let's do it, but let's only do the one. Let's tease it a
okay.
little bit.
Okay. Andrew David does Hamlet's great to be or not to be speech, and as I'm sure we all know, our dear Hamlet is thinking about doing something very serious to himself with a knife. He's very unhappy with his life, and he's very tortured and torn at that point. And after that speech is finished, Andrew simply goes, I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grade. And you remember the rest of that song. It ain't a bebop happy tune. And Andrew segues it so beautifully, it seems as though it was meant to do that, or so we hope. And that's what we hope the audiences will think.
And it's a strange mirror on John Lennon's own life, too.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited just hearing that process explained right there. Yeah. That's super. You must be having a great time.
You know, I got to tell you, it is a great time, and the show is a wonderful concept show. It's something different. It's something fun. You enjoy the Shakespeare you see. It's not too much Shakespeare, and it's not the kind of pieces that get long and drawn out to where you lose the rhythm of the show. You get the amazing, wonderful pieces of Shakespeare you've loved for so long and you're familiar with, and then these Beatles songs that maybe you haven't heard for years, and they spring to life. But I got to tell you, what makes it most enjoyable are the people we work with, because this cast, we have Richard Winterstein, who of course was handpicked by Burt Lancaster to come out to this town and does amazing work, and of course Aria from Land Before Time, she plays Ducky, which my kids watch all the time, so whenever my kids see Aria they go yep. And J. Paul Zimmerman from the Disney Channel. We've got some really amazing people, and of course Paul Strolley was in the original workshop
cast. Yes, I was
going to
bring Paul up.
Yep,
yeah,
exactly.
But he was not able to be a part of this run this time.
Because he's off making big
time
money.
And you
know,
if anything that he loves to do, he loves to sing. And you know, he's that's studying, right. and he does it well, and had his first foray into that as an adult into that business of singing with Cabrillo Music Theater and their production of Mary Poppins. So.
And Paul has such an amazing understanding of both the Beatles catalog and of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
He's an encyclopedia, really, and he was a great benefit in workshopping this show. So
fantastic.
It's a really fun group to work with. What is your connection to these four ragamuffins?
You know, we'll talk about that in the Live Arts calendar because it's a little bit of a story I don't want to take away from Alan.
I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah. So the performance, this was done once before for a shorter run than this?
Yes, we had just a little debut. We thought this was going to be for us. Something that we loved, and those of us that love Shakespeare and love the Beatles, we didn't know if the audience in general would agree with us about this. You know, you always try to think, what does America want? You know, and you can't always go by that. But we were amazed the first night when we did the very first performance. Right away after the first Shakespeare speech, when it went into a song, the audience kind of collectively went, I get it. Oh, okay. And then what began to happen was with each subsequent Shakespeare speech, we could kind of sense the audience is going, okay, so what's the song going to be? What's the Beatles song going to be after this? And that's why we don't list it in the program. We call it a surprise concert. We list the Shakespeare pieces, but we don't say what it goes into, and we hope that they agree and like that. But I want to tell you a quick thing about Paul Strolley. I didn't know Paul, and we needed an actor his age, his range, and so forth, and I'd heard about him from Terry Fishman, who had worked with him in the Mary Poppins production. So I called Paul out of the blue and got him at a restaurant. He answered, and he was with his wife, and I said, oh, you're at a restaurant. Oh, I just have an idea I want to talk to you about. And he goes, oh, that's okay. And he said, but the food's coming right now. And I said, oh, okay. Well, he said, well, what's it about? And I said, it's about Shakespeare and the Beatles. And he went, oh, all right. Okay, what's it about now? Tell me more. And so I said, well, not the food's there. He goes, no, keep going. So Paul, the minute he heard Beatles, because he's a lifelong fan also, I guess his food got cold because I gave him the whole concept. And he just said, look, I'm in, man. Don't even go on. I got it. And he came up with some great ideas in our rehearsals that mm-hmm. we really loved. And we miss him, but that's...
We have the amazing Clynell Jackson filling in for him as well now.
Indeed.
He's doing a great, great job. So, yeah, we have some really fun times in rehearsal. I think the concept of this show is so appealing for a performer to work on because you get to work with two of the greatest writers of all time.
I would think also that it's a wonderful way to introduce to young theatergoers the music of the Beatles and, of course, the Bard himself.
Right? A very good point, Michael.
I hope that you're seeing that happen. Our parents bringing their children to this?
Yeah, and tonight is our first dress rehearsal, and we have several drama classes from Richard Winterstein's. He teaches, and he's bringing his classes. So they're all that age. And you know, it's amazing. They all know Beatles songs. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great.
You would think that's from another time.
You know what? Maybe American Idol helps with that a little bit because they always feature them usually every year. So.
True. Oh, that's true.
It's true.
Right?
Alan, would you be so kind as to hang around with us for a few more minutes?
Certainly. Yes, absolutely.
Hey,
and
my
we should
pleasure.
Tell folks at this juncture at least how to get tickets. We'll say it again, but the show runs April 8th. It opens tomorrow evening, and that runs through the 24th. And tickets can be purchased at 805, area code 805-381-2747, or go to the following web address, which is hillcrestarts.com, or... The producing entity of this is coolbritannia.org, C-O-O-L, Britannia.org. Tickets are very affordable, $20. Wow. And we have a special discount to offer the people who listen to our show.
That's right.
And if they go to either of those two locations to purchase tickets and mention State of the Arts, they will receive a $2 discount. Right? Very generous.
$18 to see a show. It's
$18,
amazing.
Yeah. Wow. Absolutely. So... We have a live arts calendar. We were going to talk about The Real Housewives of Toluca Lake, the musical. And who here is a reality fan? Who watches TV, reality TV?
I cannot put my hand up on that.
I can't either. I can maybe put it up this way. It's certainly not going to anything but the right shows, if there are such a thing there. Alan, I assume you do not? Do you watch reality TV?
Not regularly, no.
Yeah, okay. A little slice of it every once in a while,
yes.
Right? What would that be? What is your go-to show?
Well, basically, I really am in rehearsal most of my life.
Yeah, it's its own reality show.
I only hear about these things when I come home. But no, I haven't seen any of the new... I used to make my living totally in TV. This is terrible.
Now you can't because there's too many reality shows.
Right.
So.
Right. Isn't that funny? And isn't that truth? Yeah, actually. But, well, this is, you know, the Real Housewives of Atlanta or the Real Housewives of New Jersey or whatever the heck. Mm-hmm. All of those kinds of things. This is really a send-up of that genre of reality TV.
But this is something even more than that. This is a commentary on that as well.
Yes.
It takes it over the top in a way that is absolutely hysterical.
And it is a musical,
mm-hmm.
So that also puts a nice spin on it. And it is book and music and lyrics by Molly Bell and directed by Roger Bean. And already, the first question I asked Roger on opening night was, this has got to be constructed in such a way that all you do is lift out the name of the city and replace it with another one and mm-hmm. take it on the road and have somebody locally work with you about the jokes that are relative to that particular city. He said, absolutely right. And they're in the process of putting a tour together with the show. So I thought for myself, I had a bit of a time getting into the show, I think, in the first 15 minutes to see exactly where they were going and on, you know, what level. But Roger, who I know and his work speaks for itself, certainly, it's a big success with the Marvelous Wonderettes off-Broadway and throughout this country in theaters everywhere, set back in the 60s and in a high school with four girls who attend a reunion. It's a very smart show. And... other such shows. He loves pop music.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that has a brilliant cast of characters who are multi-talented, don't you think? I mean, we knew a couple of them who were on this show a couple of weeks ago.
You know, it is a full-fledged musical. I mean, it has full numbers with complete score, and it really is amazing to watch, particularly the entire cast, but particularly Mark Gensberg.
Mark is amazing.
We had him on the show. He plays, I believe, 18 roles, and he... I kept waiting for him to start sweating with as hard as he was working. I did not see a drop of sweat on him the entire show. That man, I mean, he just was seamless and effortless as he transitioned from character to character. And he really showed a significant amount of craft that I think is really admirable to watch.
Yeah.
But more than that, everybody was perfectly cast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what a hilarious group of performers. The direction was great and the score was really very impressive as well.
So. And our other guest who was on with Mark here on our program, Cynthia Ferrer.
Beautiful Cynthia.
Whose character, Beezus, which is an unusual name in itself, but she knows how to bring it to being kind of one of the matriarch wives, if you will, just by the standards of the way the show is set up. And Cynthia is one of Gary Marshall's favorite actresses, who does the starred in his Happy Days musical,
right?
That he wrote and playing Rip Marion, actually.
Uh-huh.
Great actress. Mark, we've talked about Meredith Patterson, who plays Joanne. Adrian Visnick, mm-hmm. who is from LA's Next Great Stage Star, as I told you.
Of course.
Andrew, and for those of you that don't know what that is, it's a musical theater competition that I conceived and have produced now for 10 years, and it gives people their starts in musical theater on a professional basis. Adrian Visnick is wonderful as Babette, and just knocks it out of the park with her vocals, as all the girls do, really. I mean, the music is just tailored for them, and it's fun, and it's silly, and it's, you can't believe they really just said that, and it's all those things.
It's got that raunchy feel, too, that if you get addicted to binge-watching Real Housewives anywhere, you will love this musical, because it really is that style
raunchy
of show.
Raunchy in the best possible way.
And it's fun to watch, too, because anything you see at the Falcon, you're going to know it's done up right.
That's right.
It's done fully
That's
produced.
Right.
It reminded me a lot, as I was watching this show, of something that kind of sprung out of your TV and grabbed you to make you watch it, because you couldn't stop. It was really very engaging.
Exactly. And here's the best part of all of this, is it has been extended through May 1st, ladies and gentlemen. So for tickets to go to see The Real Housewives of Toluca Lake, the musical at the Falcon Theater at 4252 Riverside Drive in Burbank, California, just simply call 818-955-8101 or go to Falcon Theater, with an R-E at the end of the word theater, falcontheater.com. And I promise you a wonderful, fun, different night of theater.
And you have another promise I need you to keep, because I am dying to hear your Beatles story. I mean, I tell you, I sit down and you start talking about Andy Gibb and I feel like I'm on the plane with you. I want to know, where did you run into these four men? Did you meet them personally?
Well, let me tell you how all this happened. I represented one of them, George Harrison. And George was the first person to leave the Beatles to tour on his own when they broke up. He was the first one out. And it was the Dark Horse tour of the country. And George was in a different place at that time, you know, in his life. And he was very much in love with a young lady who was a secretary at A&M Records, which was his label. And his label was one of the subsidiary labels. Dark Horse was mm-hmm. his label. And Olivia, as who he married. And, you know, I mean, it was such a big deal. And the opening act was Ravi Shankar, who George was very into at that time. The only problem with this is that George didn't want to do very much in the show. And he wanted Ravi to do almost the entire show. But the show was being sold as a George Harrison debut concert tour. So things went awry until that got fixed, but it did get fixed. And Ravi, who was a very lovely, lovely man and very talented in his own right, certainly, you know, the amount of time that he did and the reversal of everything, it worked out eventually. I befriended the first family, the Fords, at the White House during those days, and Jack Ford in particular became a friend of mine during that time period, and he was a huge fan. So for me, this was one of the highlights of my publicity and public relations career. I represented many people mm-hmm. of great star power, but George, you know, you're talking about a Beatle, and he and I really did not have a real, true relationship. You know, when you spend time with people on the road, you usually develop something with them. But
sure.
He was so in his own space
wow.
and with Olivia that it pretty much stayed there. And I had asked Jack Ford to help me get him into the White House because he had an issue with the monies that never got released to Bangladesh from the concert that he had done for them. So, and I'm taking up time away from the guest. At any rate, cut it short. We get Jack says anything. My mother will call you. This is what he says on the phone. My mother will call you. And Betty Ford calls me and says, Jack tells me you're coming to the White House.
Wow.
How about we have lunch? Who likes what? Let me put it all together. So we had this amazing time. I tell George about it. He did not want to go. He wanted nothing to do about it until I said, and a meeting with the president.
Wow.
To talk about Bangladesh. Then we were on. We did that. And that meeting, he was the first rock artist of his stature to go to the White House at that particular point in time.
Amazing.
It turned the whole tour around. Yeah. Not that there was a lack of ticket sales. The thing sold out before we started. It just took the pressure off of all of these things, like him in particular. And he woke up. You know, he woke up. Hmm. And we were heading into New York. And this was many months of traveling before we got to that part in New York at Madison Square Garden. I was done. I was mentally and emotionally drained from taking care of this little boy named George Harrison, who very much was a little boy. And I could not wait to come back to Los Angeles, and we were staying at the Plaza Hotel. And his lovely manager, Dennis O'Brien, who had been with him for a while, rang my room. After the concert, by the way, in New York at Madison Square Garden, and again, my only MO is to get home. He closes the show with My Sweet Lord, which he was in the earlier part of the tour wouldn't even do Beatles music, right? My Sweet Lord, and it's the end of the, and it hit me at that point. This is the end of the tour. Oh my God, My Sweet Lord. And he says to everybody who works for him, and I want you all to come out on stage with me and sing this with me. So here I was standing on Madison Square Garden stage singing My Sweet Lord with George Harrison. Go back to the hotel, get a phone call from the manager. The manager says, Michael, George would like to see you. I thought, oh, my God, what did I do now? He doesn't have any more press responsibilities. Went up to the suite. Dennis O'Brien, the manager, opened the door, and he said, turn this way. And I walked this way, and there was George, Ringo, Paul, and John. All in the same room.
Unbelievable.
Having champagne, and George stood up and said, with the glass, this one's for you, pal. And he said, I am so sorry for all the trouble I gave you in the earlier part of the tour.
Wow.
He sat there all night.
Wow.
And drank until I had to leave for the airport.
Was that, were they all four together after that ever? Do you know?
No, well, I don't know about that,
that's
socially
so
speaking, but yeah, they had come to the concert as well in disguise.
If you had only pitched a reunion album then,
right,
you could
have.
Exactly. Oh, my
yeah.
goodness.
But it was, you know, it was one of those big aha moments where
wow.
you just kind of, you can't really believe what's taking place.
You're a part of history at that point.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
Amazing, Michael.
But more importantly is this woman sitting to my left.
Well, I will tell you, she is one of my favorite actresses. Her name is Kelly Christopherson. She's our next guest, and she is making her debut in a Cool Britannia production. And her past roles have included Belle and Elizabeth in The Christmas Carol with Alan Hunt at the Thousand Oaks Repertory Corporation. Claire in Traded, a short film that's now available online. Hermione and Articules in Winter's Tale. She has played Sarah Brown in Guys and Dolls. Gladys in Pajama Game. Rebecca Talbert in The Kentucky Cycle, one of my favorite shows. And Sheila in Inspector Calls. She is the great, one of my truly favorite actresses in this town, Kelly Christopherson.
Yeah. Welcome, Kelly.
Kelly, so Kelly, funny. Kelly. So good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Now, tell me. I want to tell you. This is one of the strangest things that I've ever had to say to an actress, but Kelly had a mountain to climb in that my counterpart in this show before you showed up was the amazing, amazing Lindsay Newell, who I love so much.
Yes.
And she did the workshop but was unavailable, and we thought, what are we going to do?
I know.
And you walked through the door and blew us all away.
Aww.
So amazing. And it's really such a pleasure to have you in this cast. What did you think when you got the call about the project and it was tried to be just explained to you? This is a Shakespeare / Beatles show. What did you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, like you said, it's like, how could you get better authors, right? Like
so
Shakespeare
true.
And the Beatles, like, it's like, how could you not say yes to something like that? Like, that's mm-hmm. a, yeah.
It's amazing.
Wow.
Thing.
And so Shakespeare doesn't come naturally to just to anybody, especially someone of your young age, right?
Yeah.
What was your history? How did you become involved in engaged in that?
Well, I had a literature minor, so I've always loved reading Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. But I'd never had much of a chance to perform it until I came to California. My dad has always, like, super revered Shakespeare when he was, like, a creative writing mm-hmm. major. His mm-hmm. teachers always told them, if you have any aspirations of being a creative writer, you will study Shakespeare. And, I mean, that's how I feel about the Beatles, too, where it's like, if you have any aspirations of making music of any kind, you will study the Beatles. Like,
very true.
And this is what this show has done for me, is it's, like, the first time I've had to sit down and listen to the Beatles, like, and not doing anything else, not, like, my mom listening to the Beatles and overhearing it, or, like, watching Across the Universe, you know, which is really embarrassingly, like, the most of my exposure to the Beatles was Julie Taymor's film Across the Universe, but,
sure.
Yeah, it's been really an educational show for me.
Well, now your pops is an amazing writer himself, both as a songwriter, a lyricist. He's really done an amazing job, and he's responsible for me picking up a guitar with me and Bobby McGee, so he has that to answer for. But it's amazing, too, when you realize that you yourself are a fantastic musician, and you have a band, correct? Appalachian Murder
yes.
Bunnies, which,
yes.
as you may know, the Appalachian Murder Bunny is by far the most violent of all the Murder Bunny varieties.
Is it really?
Truly. I'm from Kentucky, I can vouch to.
Oh,
yeah. Tell me, and you have a musical counterpart, I believe, who also has an amazing musical lineage, Andrew Hagar, is that correct?
Yeah, Andrew Hagar.
Yeah,
yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And you guys tour all over. You just got back from Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And
how was that?
Scotland? It was great. It was great.
Wow.
Yeah, we'd never even played together, you know. We dated a while before we started playing music, so it was like a terrible thing. We were like, okay, kids, get out there. Start playing.
Wow.
And can you tell us who Andrew's father is?
Sammy Hagar.
Oh,
yes.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Fantastic.
But so, like, when we met, we both came from a very similar place of, like, it's kind of intimidating to play music at all when
you think,
you know, when you've got some shoes to fill. So, like, but, like, the fact, like, that he's been so, like, able to encourage me out of that place of, it's like, we're just doing this for fun. This is our own weird little thing. So, and we have so much fun, like, writing and singing harmonies together. And that's, you know.
Your father must have been in your youth. I can't imagine him not being this way, because just looking at him and anything that he's ever done, to me, he's so approachable. I mean, you know, I've never met him, of course, but approachable as an actor, as you know, when I see him in the interviews he's done, etc.
You feel like you know him.
Exactly. Yeah. And he must be a very loving man.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I feel like that's always been a value that I've been raised with, is, you know, the groundedness. And that's why we weren't, you know, they moved to the middle of nowhere to raise us and stuff
right.
like that. And
smart.
It's funny. Yeah. Like, it's, he's always just about the truth and the heart. And definitely.
And
I get that a lot. And I never understood that until I moved to LA and I realized.
He's still out there singing, too, isn't he?
Hmm?
He's still out there singing.
Oh, yeah.
He? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We sing with him.
Yes. I saw a photo of the two of you together in concert. How is that?
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I play banjo and he sings. And he's still singing his own music. And it's funny that, like, your connection is with George Harrison, because the Beatle that my family has a connection
uh-huh.
with is when my dad loves to mow the lawn on Maui, and and he sometimes gets, like, accosted by tourists and, like, tour bands. And he said one day he was mowing the lawn, and somebody started shouting at him while he was mowing, and they're like, Chris, it's George. And he's like, yeah.
George who?
And he said the minute he realized it was George Harrison, he just, like, all the blood drained.
Oh, that is so funny.
Oh,
Kelly, I'm sure that obviously people love to hear stories about your dad, but what I've been impressed with is your calm and your ability and your love for Shakespeare.
Aww.
From the moment I could tell that we had you because of how deeply you cared about Shakespeare, which of course is what our group has always cared so deeply about as well. Not only the history of what it means to actors today, but also the style and the discipline it takes to perform it. What's your favorite Shakespeare show?
Oh my gosh.
Right.
That's an impossible question.
Pick it now. We'll produce it.
Oh, no. Man, I just love the Scottish play. I love Macbeth. It's just so dark and creepy and weird. And I love Hamlet and
Taming of the Shrew, of course.
Yes. I don't know. It's hard. Like, I feel like Shakespeare is so much like classical music, where it's like, even if you don't completely understand what's going on, you feel smarter for having been through it. You know? Like, I feel like, and the Beatles just make you feel happier. So it's like, if, when you're hearing all of this stuff, you just feel smarter and happier after having
Very
been
well
through
said.
It.
How many songs do you sing in the show?
Wow. We'll have to find out.
There are 20 songs and 20 Shakespeare pieces.
Okay.
So, with but a couple of surprises in addition.
Oh,
to that.
All right. So it's not. You said we'll have to find out. So what does that mean, though?
Kelly has a part in a number of different numbers as well. So not all performers only do solos.
Okay.
So there's other. Yeah. So it's a fun concept for a show because it's got a very different feel than a normal musical.
This is a surprise element. Is it?
I think if you come see the show, you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Okay. we can leave it at that. And I'm excited. But you must have one favorite song. You don't need to name.
A Beatles song?
Yeah.
Right now, I love the Sgt. Pepper song because it makes me feel like I would be one of those girls that are getting carried out of the audience because they're screaming and crying. Like, the energy behind that song is like, I can feel the Beatlemania behind Sgt. Pepper. I'm like,
We got to put that in the show.
I cannot wait to see this show.
It's a fun, and I tell you, it's been such a blast to work on. It's interesting to see how many great people that love great music also love Shakespeare. So that's a really cool thing to see together.
Wow.
Do we have time to embarrass these two amazing
people?
We do. Because they've been such good guests.
Fortunately, we do. Yes.
I want to embarrass the heck out of them right
now.
We're
going to start with Kelly, though, because she was, we're just finishing with her interview, and I think that would be appropriate for her to start.
We do, of course, embarrassing moments on this show, Ms. Christofferson. And I know, obviously, you have, I'm sure, one somewhere in your life that you can tell us. But an embarrassing performance moment, something that makes us feel we're all part of the same theatrical family, all dealing with the same issues. Do you have anything that comes to mind?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So community theater growing up, my very first kiss at all was a stage kiss. In Guys and Dolls. And so, you know, there's this big dramatic kiss where Sarah Brown gets kissed by Skye Masterson.
Thanks for ruining the ending.
It's not the ending, it's the beginning.
Oh, right, okay.
So I was, you know, like super nervous and scared and like in this, you know, Skye Masterson got caught in the moment, he put his tongue in my mouth.
Whoa!
I just remember being like, like it was terrifying and hilarious. And then, you know, after the kiss comes a real slap. So like I just gave him a big slap.
And Chris Christofferson somewhere grabs a shotgun and goes looking for this young man.
That slap.
No, it was great.
That's hilarious. Oh, what a surprise. How old were you at that point?
I was 16.
Welcome to the world. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Mr. Hunt, do you have an embarrassing... Now, I know you're usually flawless and nothing strange ever happens, correct?
Of course. No, I'm going to make up some... No. No, I guess we all have our crosses to bear in this business of ours, but I'll relay one if you're so disposed.
We'd love to hear it.
Sure. In my early days, I was added to the cast of the Donna Reed Show. I played her... daughter's boyfriend. That's Shelley Fabre, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
Who sang Johnny Angel.
Yes.
And she sang Johnny Angel when I was on the show. But anyway, there was a scene we had together where it's a dream sequence, and all of the boys in her life that adore her are walking like zombies because we're all so in love with her in this dream sequence. And I had a line of dialogue that I didn't recognize the word of. And being 17 and knowing everything, I didn't feel it necessary to ask anyone what this word was, or better yet, how to pronounce it. The word was Vesuvius. I'm supposed to compare the feeling I have to Vesuvius. And of course, I didn't have in my head to ask, what am I? I didn't know that word.
And you can't Google it. You can't hear a pronunciation.
No Googling yet. So at the first rehearsal, right before they film it, I said with all the passion I could muster, when I see you, I think of Vesuvius. And everybody was silent. And then it kind of went the other way. And I said, I just said it correctly. I'm sorry. You see, I'm so conditioned now to knowing the real word. No, I said at the top of my lungs, when I see you, I think of Vesuvius. That's what lay in the air for so long.
I think my mother had a bad case of that when she was 24. It's terrible.
It's awful. Yes, it's a virus. But if I also could add, this is not an embarrassing thing, but there's one bit of trivia about the Beatles I don't think the general public knows. Are we short of time?
No, we have about a minute left.
Okay, yeah. This is very quick. If you were to know that the Beatles are actually the butt of a joke in a James Bond movie, would you believe that?
Wow.
And know what I'm talking about?
No.
Well, I would perhaps believe it.
In 1964, when Goldfinger came out, this was when the Beatles were just just getting known to us. They were already a big hit in London, but they weren't the worldwide sensation that they became. And Sean Connery meets this girl in the beginning of the movie, and then she gets spray-painted gold, and it's very sad what happens to her. But before that happens, she says something about all the chill has gone out of the champagne. And so Sean Connery says, well, I'll get some more ice. And the girl says, who needs it? And he says, my dear, there are just some things that are not done. You can't have Dom Perignon without ice, da 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 da. And then he says, that's like listening to the Beatles without earmuffs. Now, I say this only because that changed very quickly. But that just shows, at a time, the Beatles were thought of as this noisy teenage group with funny hairdos.
Funny. Right.
And they'll pass, like all the other rock groups and so forth. So it's just a time in history that I think.
A piece of trivia. When they made their appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show, you don't remember that, of course. It was a huge, big variety show in this country that took the airwaves every Sunday night.
Did you just look at Kelly to see if she remembered Ed Sullivan?
I said, you don't remember this.
Okay, good.
What do you think the Beatles were paid for that appearance? They came here and started...
Yeah, it was their first appearance in America,
where they
right?
paid $100,000... 50, 25, 10, 5.
I'd say at least 25, right? It's got, I think 40, it's got to be 10 for each, right?
What do you think, Alan?
1964, right? Yep. We're talking about?
Yep.
I have no idea.
Well, they don't care too much for money, right?
All they need is love.
$10,000.
For the entire performance?
Yeah.
My goodness. Yeah. Do you think we could get them for that? Come on, state of the arts.
Yeah, well,
just get Ringo in here. Yeah. You, of course, know on Saturday Night Live when they did the bit where they said, hey, show up. If all Beatles show up, we'll give you $1 million to show up each. One showed up and said, can I have half of it and have a quarter of it?
We have to wrap up this lovely hour. Thank you so much for being with us, Kelly and Alan. What a pleasure. And I'm so excited to see. I'll see you both.
And thank you to our special guest for calling in today. A pleasure, Derek, to talk
thank
to you.
Thank you, Derek Lewis. And thank you, Andrew David James. Always a pleasure to be sitting across from you.
Thank you, Michael. Where will I see you next week?
Where will we see each other next week?
You're supposed to say on the radio.
On the radio.
I'll look forward to that, my friend. Have a good week, everybody. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.